ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Prices shift, petrol jumps, shares fall. A company cuts jobs, and suddenly the business story is everyone's story.
I'm Alan Kohler.
And I'm Carrington Clark. From Monday to Thursday on ABC Business Daily, we break down the biggest stories in business, finance, and the economy, and why they matter.
Then on Fridays, I'll go deeper on That's Business, with the people making decisions, taking risks, and shaping where the economy goes next.
Find it all in the ABC Business Daily feed on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
One Nation's Barnaby Joyce says the Minor Party doesn't support the White Australia policy following Pauline Hanson's appearance on far-right figure Tommy Robinson's podcast. The One Nation leader has robustly defended speaking to the UK agitator, while the Prime Minister says he finds it astonishing that Pauline Hanson has travelled overseas to speak with fringe figures and talk Australia down. And while the Albanese government took the opportunity to unveil its response to the Islamophobia Envoy's report and talk up the importance of social cohesion, Labor have been criticised for not backing it in full and waiting 10 months after it was released. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Jacob Grieber.
And Jacob, we're together in Canberra together. I'll tell you why I'm still here. I obviously was hosting Insiders on the weekend, so I was in Canberra, but then I stayed a little longer because I spoke at the Parliamentary Library Conference.
That's about as niche as it's possible to get.
Can I tell you, I'm going to big spruik for the Parliamentary Library. They do the most robust, independent, impartial research. If you go onto their website, it is so good. So spruik for the important work they do in a world where people are manipulating things all the time. They talk in facts, my friends. But
and they're really serious people. Like, they are deep into the detail of issues and the history that they pull up when you go and ask them a question. Extraordinary.
Yeah. But everything they tell you is facts. And we live in a world devoid of discussion around facts. We have many opinions.
We're
less
in a world
facts.
Of factiness.
Yeah. But we are into facts. And so here I am. And it's Monday. So it means it's time for more information about more polls, you know, and it's really interesting today's poll, which we'll get to. But the fallout from Pauline Hanson's so-called fact-finding UK mission is continuing. Yesterday she addressed a, you know, not full crowd at the Conservative CPAC conference in London. She spoke about her fear that Australia would become like England. She said that that had been the sort of motivation for her trip. Then the Seven spotlight story on Pauline Hanson we've been waiting for went out. She said she loved the idea of mass deportations. It's a policy idea put forward by the UK's Reform Party. Hanson later clarified mass deportations would be for illegal immigrants only. Today, Barnaby Joyce has been faced with questions as her MP here, and he's kind of backed it in, actually, as an idea, although we don't know anything about how it would look. Jacob, One Nation has had to issue some clarifications off the back of the trip, in part about whether they support the White Australia policy.
Yeah, so we can go into the detail, and we will, but, I mean, hasn't she succeeded? She's the centre of attention. Everyone's talking about her trip. Everyone's talking about all the things she's done, the nice beach resort she went to, the people she's spoken to. We're all talking about her. That's got to be part of the old strategy. If
so
you're not being talked
attention about,
yeah, it's the attention. She has consumed the attention economy at the moment, and that means it's harder for people like Angus Taylor to cut through. The government obviously has big levers. It's announcing real policy that actually happens, so it can always override that. But that's what's going on, I think. So, yeah, some of it.
So you think
some
it's all of net benefit to her still?
I think in aggregate, this is what she wants. It's straight from the MAGA Trump playbook, which is that you stay at the center of the attention economy. And so some of these things will hurt her, I suspect. But in aggregate, this is where they want to be.
I think that's a really good analysis. And so it brings me to just briefly news poll. It shows Labor's primary support has fallen to equal with One Nation at 30%, Coalition sitting at 19% primary support. But the fact that the Coalition, it's all within the margin of error, but still, the Coalition and then One Nation story, they've actually gone up, but within the margin of error, I think. But still, you didn't see all of the news which was framed around being like that it was negative for her affect her polling, did it?
Didn't seem to.
No.
Didn't seem to. She's sort of been at this level now for a couple of months, I'd say. And yeah, it bounces around. She's not getting more support. This seems to be the ceiling. We've talked about that a lot. She hasn't got beyond that 30% mark yet. We'll see. But yeah, to the point, she's not losing ground as a result of all the antics that we're seeing, which tells you that people are not, they don't care. They don't care what people's judgments are about whether the things she's saying are appalling, whether the people she's associating with are appalling. They don't care. What they're angry about is a number of things. She's the vehicle. She's the sort of locus for their anger.
Yeah. I mean, pollster Tony Barry always says she's their wrecking ball, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And because she's their wrecking ball, it's not really entirely about her.
Yeah, and the normal rules don't apply, it sometimes feels like, don't you think? The normal rules of politics, if the Prime Minister or the opposition leader said the sorts of things that she has said or associated herself with the sort of people she has, it would be catastrophic for them. Like, there would be an immediate consequence. Doesn't seem to apply.
And I'm going to say something controversial because, you know, why not? You live once, Jacob. You say what you really think. That interview I saw on Spotlight with her was the most similar treatment I've seen. It kind of shocked me. 30 years after hitting the main stage and getting that 60 Minutes Please Explain moment, which is infamous in Australian folklore and history, isn't it?
Right.
Where she was asked, you know, what's xenophobic? Are you xenophobic? She didn't know what it meant. She replies, please explain. It became a catchphrase.
Yeah, and I think that the one of the lessons from that interview and that line, please explain, that was seen as the elites sort of sneering at her lack of knowledge of a word. And then when she asked for an explanation, people laughed at that. It actually had a counter effect. It actually boosted her
support. Seemed very snobby. I thought last night's Spotlight treatment broadly was similar, to be honest. There was I thought they did have a sort of patronising tone towards her. And I thought, what is this? Isn't it funny? Does this not play into her hands, right, where she's sitting there and did you get that sense too? I just thought it was really actually reminiscent of that journalism.
I have to confess, PK, I did not watch Spotlight. I'm sorry to the makers of that show, but I've read a few accounts
okay.
of it.
Okay.
I'm glad you did. I absolutely have.
And I will tell you that I found that – And I'm not here to trash other journalists. I'm bored by that. I'm not into that art. It's more about, I'm saying, when you frame someone and it's this kind of, they tried to do some accountability with her. They, you know, quiz Tommy Robinson on his record. They did some things that I'm saying are worthy of doing, but the tone between Pauline and the journo sometimes had that sort of framing. And I just thought, that's what it looked like 30 years ago. Mm. Like, have we learnt nothing about the way that, you know, you kind of go about this business? Another point I want to make, I did watch it and I want to just talk about some highlights and lowlights. I think, you know, some of the deportation stuff, all of that you would think would be negative for Pauline Hanson, her doubling down on speaking to Tommy Robinson, for instance, as well. But actually, maybe not so much. Part of her brand is that she stands her ground even if it's not popular, including on things like speaking to Tommy Robinson, which for me is ill-judged. I think it is. I think his record is alarming. But she kind of frames things in such a different way. Now, the White Australia policy that she sort of talked about how things started going wrong 1973, the dismantling of the White Australia policy.
You've got to be quite careful, I think, about that line. Because it was a question that he asked of her.
Yes.
He said, what happened? As in, when did immigration. So she says, well, it began with the White Australia policy being lifted. It was actually lifted by the, you know, the lifting began under the coalition government.
Absolutely.
And Gough Whitlam took it another step further. But yeah, so she's not saying bring the White Australia policy back. I think you've got to be careful with
that. I agree with you. What she says.
Yeah.
It is not what she says.
Yeah.
However.
But it's very consistent with what her view has always been. If you go back to that original maiden speech she gave when she first came into Parliament in the late 90s, she said Australia was at risk of being swamped by Asian people.
Mm.
Well, what happened after the end of the White Australia policy was that, you know, a blatantly racist policy was ended and people could come from all over the world. So she's linking those things
exactly
together. And I think that's the important
point. That's the vulnerability for her. So she can walk it back all she likes. And I wrote in my column today, we'll link it in the show notes. Sure, I accept exactly the point you make. She didn't say bring back the White Australia policy. She did not. We can't say things she said if she didn't say them and shouldn't. However, why mention it? I ask, why even mention it as if it's this pivotal moment of, you know, a long march, which she sees as negative, right? She frames it. But post that, we've had these kind of waves and that is the question.
And she also says that the initial waves, those were folks who learned English, you know, assimilated, became Australians. By definition, I think she's suggesting subsequent waves less so.
Yes, she is. And I'd like to fact check some of that too. Firstly, the government made it a lot easier to get kind of education that was publicly funded as part of your deals back in the olden days, first thing. Secondly, and I've been meaning to say this, and if you are from my community, you'll listen to this and get it, it's not entirely true. In my own household, there was very low levels of English spoken by some members, right? And the questioning about their authenticity as Australians was not like it is now. We sometimes tell historical stories in a very, very warped way. They weren't all those migrants automatically knew fluent English. Have you gone into some of the Italian and the Greek communities? Some of those older members still don't know very much English.
And Pico, you don't need me to tell you how when you were growing up, you know, your community heard some of the things that communities today are hearing about what's wrong with them and why they're not becoming Australian and they eat their own food and hang out in their own suburbs. This is, I suspect, very
constantly
familiar to you.
Daily and familiar. But what I'm saying is that she's romanticising an earlier part of, we did it better then. No, actually, those migrant communities often did speak very dominantly their languages still, just like the Indian community does, just like the Chinese Australian community does. So I just think it's important to fact check the sort of history here when we talk about English and so forth. But I digress. I want to go back to her overseas trip and the way people have reacted to it. The PM saying she's talking Australia down. I thought that was interesting. What do you make of the way he and the opposition have tried to deal with her through this? They've been a little careful, I've noticed, of not being too critical of the trip itself because they don't want to look like they're punching down on her. It plays into her hands.
No, and so they're going to the substance of what it is she's trying to talk about. And, you know, Angus Taylor has called One Nation a one-person show, that if they ever did get into government, that's not enough to be a competent government. You know, they're not a team. It's a one-person band. And so that's where his attack goes. And as you say, the Prime Minister's talking about the fact that she seems to be associating with people to then talk about Australia in a negative light. And I think that's appealing to a broader audience without, as you say, punching down, quote-unquote, on Pauline Hanson.
Mm. And Pauline Hanson being punched down on does nothing but actually help her, particularly with a cohort of Australians who think this is the way elites work, right? Like, you're all snobs, you all just mock her, but she's actually a truth teller. It talks to that narrative, doesn't it?
It does. And she said, I think in one of the interviews or one of the appearances, I've frankly lost track, there's been so many, that she was tired of, I think she used the phrase white privilege. She was tired of hearing that term.
At CPAC, she said, you know,
what did you make of that? What's that about?
Well, I think it comes from some reaction. Actually, I can think of a parallel, which is men in reaction to, oh, we keep hearing of the gender pay gap, women's rights, you know, and toxic masculinity, you know, how that became a thing. And so feminists sort of have reviewed some of that language to try and not alienate, because some of that was working that way. I think the same thing with people of colour, minority groups, rightly fighting for more space. If you look at top organisations, parliament, so forth, they are massively underrepresented, right? So it is an issue. They've been fighting for their rights, and this is a backlash, a sort of white-led backlash. Not all white people, not all, a narrative.
The big question in my mind is, how does this play to the general Australian community? And I'm just not sure it gets you beyond where she is now.
It does not grow her vote, yeah, but I do think it nourishes the vote she's built, perhaps, because yeah, you're not seeing too much of a slide. She's held it. Look, I want to pivot, if we can, to from One Nation and its circus, because it has been quite a circus, to Labor quietly unveiling their response to the Islamophobia Envoys report. Wrote a piece about, you know, the optics of this. It's 10 months after it was delivered, unveiled on a Saturday 9 a.m. press conference without the press gallery there, very different to the anti-Semitism envoys report, which was, you know, in the Prime Minister's courtyard. Very different treatment. Those things matter to me because I think those optics show government emphasis and interest in something. But the timing is everything, right? At the same time as Pauline Hanson's travelling the world, essentially railing against mainly Islam and some Muslim citizens, we've got the government saying they're going to support 35 of 54 recommendations from Aftab Malik's report. Interestingly, and I think this speaks to the politics of the time, they have rejected calls to overhaul counterterrorism laws. They haven't gone near the report's mention of Palestinian discrimination, right? Haven't gone near it, or anti-Arab, right? But they have done some of the more soft recommendations. I think it's really interesting, though, Jacob, that it's all happening at the same time. You know, a rise in rhetoric against Muslims, not just by Pauline Hanson, but by Liberal Party President Tony Abbott, who put out that very controversial video, basically, again, you know, talking pretty strong, tough language about multiculturalism and Islamic faith. And then this report, government wants to respond and do the right thing, but it doesn't want to talk about it too much.
Oh, it's tiptoeing through the most sort of dramatic of minefields it can think of. It does not want to draw much attention to it. And the fact that it was put out over the weekend, you know, on a quiet day, end of school holidays, tells you as much. But it's, you know, there is a sense, the Islamophobia envoy was asked about Pauline Hanson and a remark that she made back in a podcast in April where she said Islam was based on terror. Now, Aftab Malik was saying, in essence, why were those words not more forcefully condemned? And he made the link that is the sort of language that does lead to dehumanization. And as he pointed out, this is real for the Islamic community. They saw that in Christchurch in the most horrendous possible way. But, you know, at this point, we've got the Royal Commission going on into anti-Semitism. That's got all the headlines. That's where the focus is at the moment. I think one of the things people are trying to do is avoid the whataboutism in all of this. You know, deal with one issue full on at its sort of level of concern, mm-hmm, and then the other one at the same time.
Yeah.
Very hard to do.
Very hard to do. There's a lot of politics. There's a lot of negative, explosive kind of politics around some of these issues. But Labor has a pretty significant conundrum, I think. There's a million Muslims in Australia, many of them represented by the Labor government, in particular in the western suburbs of Sydney, but there are other parts of Australia too, of course. This is a community that has long been persecuted. In fact, my entire career as a journalist since September 11. Now, of course, that doesn't mean there should not be scrutiny on people who understand a radical version of Islam and do horrendous things in its name, and they shouldn't, and it's outrageous. But ordinary Muslims who are paying their taxes, sending their kids to school, trying to have a nice life, are sort of caught up in that, right? Like people who are just living their lives. As Australians, sometimes generations later from migration, right? And Labor wants to send them a message. We take seriously the discrimination you're facing. We take seriously the miscasting of what's happening to you. But equally, at a national level, post-Bondi, the mood is very, very inflammatory and intense, and they don't want to look like they, and not prepared to also, water down counter-terrorism in a way that looks like it's, you know, compromising the rights of other Australians. It's a really hard thing to walk. I have some sympathy for how hard it is, actually, because I do think there's a tension in the community. I think, though, that all of this does speak to the rhetoric of Pauline Hanson. And one Labor person who I quote, like, well, sort of paraphrase in the piece today, you know, said to me basically that there is a view in the party that actually the anti-Muslim sentiment is a very dominant sentiment in the community. The anti-multiculturalism broadly, when it involves all the different communities, less so, because people think multiculturalism has been more successful, but perhaps this part of multiculturalism some people are questioning. And that's why they're being a little careful.
Mm. Well, and then we saw it with, Tony Abbott, the national president of the Liberal Party, when he posted a video last week declaring that multiculturalism had failed and, quote, diversity is indeed not our strength, which then drew a rebuke from Andrew Bragg when you hosted Insiders yesterday. Saying
he went pretty hard, didn't he?
He went hard. Yeah. He's had a few cracks back at Abbott. He did another one a couple of weeks ago, I think, on Afternoon Briefing.
Oh, where he comes on and has a go.
But he makes the point that liberalism has created multiculturalism because it creates a framework for freedom of religion, freedom of thought, freedom of conscience, which are Liberal Party true believer values. And so there's a real clash there between yet again the more moderate version of the Liberal Party and the conservative wing in Tony Abbott. And it's playing out in this multiculturalism migration space.
Look, I think that's why, to tell you how the sausage is made, why I started the interview on Insiders with the Tony Abbott framing. I noticed lots of other journalists are very obsessed with and I understand why, the One Nation framing, what Pauline Hanson has said. But actually some of the anti-Islamic rhetoric that we're hearing actually comes from people like Tony Abbott. Like, it's not just Pauline Hanson. So actually the Liberal Party is internally divided. Tony Abbott is not just an outlier. He represents a view among, I think, a substantial group of Liberals that this is the position that should be taken. He's a bit more nuanced. If you watch his whole video, he says he doesn't agree with Hanson, he doesn't refer to her by name, but he refers to, you know, that line basically where she said there was no good Muslims. He denounces that. He doesn't believe that, but he's incredibly critical of Muslim and Islamic immigration, though, in many ways. Now, the Liberal Party still maintains that they believe in a non-discriminatory migration policy. Here they have their federal president mentioning this group, highlighting this group as basically not being coherent within that. Like, there is a problem here in terms of messaging from this party. Is it the Andrew Bragg, we're the Liberals, we're all pro-multiculturalism, non-discriminatory, or is it the Tony Abbott framing? What is the view? Like, what is the dominant position? I don't think we know. And I think Angus Taylor is going to have a really hard time kind of cutting through in some ways, because he has his federal president, who's a former prime minister, huge name, huge influence, saying one thing, and then some of his MPs saying another thing. It's this part of the electoral cycle, maybe. There can be a robust debate, but as they near an election cycle, I don't think you can go to an election cycle kind of being at sixes and sevens on what you believe on the fundamental tenets of immigration policy. And
well,
I
do think of people like Keith Wallahand, who feels that he lost the most blue ribbon of blue ribbon seats in Menzies because there was concern in the Chinese community about comments made about it, that community and its allegiance to Australia or China. So I think the Liberal Party has definitely got to solve this one fast if it wants to win some of those seats back.
It certainly does. Well, that's it for Politics Now today. Jacob, it's excellent being face-to-face with you.
Always good to be in the same room together.
You're almost as good as a librarian. Tomorrow I'll be joined by Annabelle Crabb to go behind the scenes on the little Easter eggs the Prime Minister spilled while he was making dinner for Annabelle at the Lodge. Kitchen Cabinet starts, and we are very excited to have Annabelle with us. If you have a question for us, send a short voice note to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and Fran and I will answer it. See you, Jacob.
Take care.